So it's me, but we're going to start off things a little differently this week. Okay, so you might be asking yourself, what was that about, Sam? Well, I'll tell you. That was Say It's Love by The Willies, who you probably haven't heard of, but that's my family you're listening to right there. My father is actually the vocalist and the bassist there, but today I want to talk about the drummer, a guy by the name of Rick. And people often ask me, what do I do when people die, when people go away? And one of the things that I do, and I think one of the things that everybody does, remembers the effects that they had on your life. And Rick was the drummer of my dad's band, of all of my dad's bands, as far as I could tell. They were peas in a pod. He was a part of my life. He was a part of the family. And he died last week. And I really don't know how else to show you what kind of person Rick was by just showing you what they did. So that's what I did. And we're going to go into a short commercial break. When we come back, the show proper shall begin.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at Radio Versus the Martians.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With stdhometestkit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with stdhometestkit.com.
I'm going to pretend that I haven't been on the air yet. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me for the first time in a while, you've sort of had a break from the microphone. How you doing, Becky?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be back.
What have you been up to while you have not been on the microphone?
I've been working in the background.
I'm going to pretend like I don't know.
Writing some things for the show, organizing some things, and doing a lot of work-related work.
A lot of work-related work. Yeah, she does other things other than this.
Yes, I do.
Also joining us, but you've been here a little bit more recently. How are you doing today, Bob?
Very good, thanks.
Fantastic. So we've got a lot of interesting news this week.
This is related to my work.
And this is related to your work. Yes, a Louisiana school district has been ordered to quit proselytizing. Federal Judge Elizabeth Foote decided in favor of a family whose Buddhist son was ridiculed by teachers in the school district. Sabine Parish School District promised to stop proselytizing and denigrating other faiths and promised to begin in-service training about First Amendment implications for the school setting. Additionally, they will owe the Lane family $40,000 for attorney's fees, $4,000 to make up for transportation costs related to attending another junior high 30 minutes away, and $1 to each family member for injury damages. The family has been subject to harassing phone calls, and last month, three white hood individuals shouted slurs as Sharon worked in her own yard.
Now, this is a callback to something that you guys covered, covered about 3 weeks ago. And this is in regards to a little boy in Louisiana who is of Thai descent and a Buddhist, and was ridiculed relentlessly by his own sixth grade teacher, who was subject to overt proselytization, Christian proselytization, on behalf of his school district. And you know, the school district, Sabine Parish, their number one thing about what we believe, it has since been edited, but was God exists. Then, number two, we believe that every child is capable of learning. Sorry, something's out of order here. Something is... You have not gotten peanut butter into my chocolate, nor chocolate into my peanut butter here.
Yeah.
What? I don't even know.
Well, the thing is, this isn't a recent thing, I don't think. A lot of schools have been acting like this for years, and they just now we're getting to discover that, yeah, no, you're not allowed to be a church. You're a school. People have rights, et cetera, et cetera.
Pictures of Jesus, overt Christian statements in a pledge for the school, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and
well, this particular school had across their leaderboard, their little scrawling thing, Bible quotes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like as if you were to say, let's we atheists make up a school situation that would be just over the top overt proselytization, and then no one would actually believe that it actually exists. No. Sabine Parish actually exists and was actually doing all of this business.
Yeah, and I think most telling here is the dollar to each family member for injury damages. That doesn't seem that doesn't seem like a big deal. I mean, clearly it's a dollar. It's not particularly big when you talk about the $40,000 for attorney's fees and $4,000 for transportation costs, but they have been legally proven to have done damage to this family. That is legal fact. That is a court case. That is case law. I think that's important.
They can't deny it. They've actually been found guilty. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
I think what that $1 represents here, I mean, some people might say only $1 for having, you know, racial and ethnic and curse word slurs being thrown at you as you're hanging out in your own yard. You know, $1 seems a pittance, but it really is to represent, hey, this isn't about money, but a legal recognition that this family has been damaged.
Would I have liked to seen that number have a number of zeros after it? Yeah. I think this is how you make people... I think money is how you make organizations like school districts or corporations to stand up and take notice that they're doing something wrong. You make them pay. You hit them in resources. But this is good. This has very positive implications for situations like this occurring in the future. This is the dollar in damages isn't necessarily about this case. This is, look, you cannot do this. You can complain all you like about your own First Amendment rights while you're doing your government job. But the fact of the matter is, when you are doing, as we were talking before, as you're doing the work in government, you're not allowed to suddenly start you know, telling people about your religion.
When you have a government hat on, you are not just an ordinary citizen with ordinary citizens' free speech rights. That's right.
Exactly so. And
you know, one thing that is brought up, though, about this case is that the ruling, it was, I think, a consent decree by the district judge, merely says school district promises never to do this in the future. But they're not actually, the school district itself is not actually admitting that what it was doing was wrong. That $1 amount does indicate, yes, you did damage these individuals, this family. I mean, this was a little sixth grade boy who is racially, ethnically, and religiously completely different from the majority of his peers. And he was ostracized, sent, you know, basically the school district advised, well, you know what, maybe he should go to the school district 45-minute drive away where there are more Asians.
They can say whatever they like about how they didn't do anything wrong, we're allowed to do this, this is the damage, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now, legally, we can say, sorry, no, the evidence is this. The government disagrees with you. We disagree with you. I mean, you're basically your boss, the people of the United States, thinks you did damage. You're wrong.
And the precedent is nice to have set.
And the precedent is really big. And well, definitely the fact that this school was you know, had done this and they had to make a stink out of this brought that the ire of the community of this apparently wonderful little town into the attention, you know, brought this family to the attention of some people there, but that wasn't necessarily, you know, the school doing it, so they really can't be brought to responsibility for that.
No, the school is not responsible for people, you know, sending harassing phone calls or emails or yelling at them or things like that. Yeah. That is on the individuals that are harassing this family, and, you know, they have received, this family, the Lanes, have received a lot of support from around the country and from local congregations even in that in their particular area, saying, hey, you know what, yeah, we stand with this child, we stand with your son.
I know we've got some listeners out that way. This Sabine Parish school district area, it sounds like a fantastic place to be.
Nice wholesome values.
Oh yeah.
What kind of troubles me about this is the rule apparently is do whatever you want to do and just don't get caught. And if you get caught, you say, okay, sorry, and then you back off. But you just err on the side of doing whatever the heck you want to. I mean, these are the adults here. These are the leaders that the kids are supposed to be looking up to. And this is the way they demonstrate this?
Yeah, I know.
Bob, are you familiar with the actual quizzes that this child was subjected to in his sixth grade class?
This is new to me. No,
isn't it great what the blank has made?
Yes. It was in all caps with 18 exclamation points. Fill in the correct answer. Isn't it great what the blank hath made?
Flying spitty monster?
Yeah. Or I would not do well at this school. Puffins? Yeah, I don't... What,
Bob, maybe you should go to a school 2 hours away where there are...
I deserve that. I'm sorry.
There are more atheists.
You know, I don't, because I believe in the First Amendment. I believe that, you know, the school should not be a place for religion or lack of. This is not where those discussions happen. You don't try to convince people of religious beliefs or non-religious beliefs. There's a reason that amendment exists. But someday, some atheist is going to get in trouble for doing that, and I'm looking forward to it because I want to show people what it looks like. You know.
Did you guys see the updated version of Cosmos for creationists?
I hadn't clicked on that link on the internet Bob.
I'll be honest with you. I couldn't bring myself to look.
It was just a little tiny clip, but you've got Neil deGrasse Tyson with his just amazing voice, and he's talking about, you know, whatever happened or whatever. And then overwritten, he's got a long phrase, and the voiceover is God in terms of, and what happened was God, you know, so... So even creationists can listen to Cosmos. That's good to hear.
Okay. Well, they have been. This is all over the social media, is that people are watching Cosmos, and then they're immediately going to Twitter and going, yeah, look at how awesome the universe is. Thanks, God.
Like, take that, atheist.
Take that, science. Yeah, it's like, come on.
Who's the boss now?
Well, one of the other interesting things about Cosmos, much to the dismay or disappointment of many science enthusiasts, is that it was actually not the top-rated show within its time slot. The top-rated show within its time slot when Cosmos was airing was a fictional drama called, wait for it, Resurrection.
Oh, really?
I think it's called, it might not be called Resurrection, but it's about
people coming back.
No, it's not, but it is about people coming back to life.
Oh.
Because the one about Jesus is based on a true story, so I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Which is to say you're not saying at all.
Thank you.
Funny, funny. So we have some people we need to thank this week, because especially since we didn't get to last week, I'd like to thank Peggy from Kent, Jeffrey from Seattle, Natalie from Temecula, California, Jeffs from Chicago, Rune from Denmark, Ronnie from Denmark, Philip from Australia, who writes, "The exchange rate sucks at the moment," Dan from Sweden, and Dirk from the Netherlands, for keeping the lights on here at Ask an Atheist.
That's a super international, you know, a really, really interesting, wide-ranging set of listeners we've got.
Yeah.
Set of really generous listeners.
We have a United Nations of complaining about religions.
Something like that.
It's not just us, then.
Yeah, it's not just us. And I do need to point out that Jeffs from Chicago is a very old friend of mine, one of the oldest I've got, back from the days when we would 300 baud modem at each other. So if you would like to keep the lights on here at Ask an Atheist, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, and click on, it'll take you right to our PayPal page, and every dollar you give us goes straight to show production.
You don't even have to be an old friend of Sam.
You can become
a new friend of Sam.
That would be kind of weird if it was just all people I knew. Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back in a minute, we're going to cover some really awesome news.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistofwashington.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And today we decided to bring back a beloved segment of the show, one we haven't done in quite a while. I think it's been close to 2 years at this point, last time we did it.
We've also got some requests for it.
We've got many requests for it, so we've decided to bring it back. And it is Scripture Says.
What?
Yes, indeed. And today, our piece of Scripture comes from the Psalms. It's 137:9. That's chapter 137. That's
Psalm 137.
Psalm 137.
Verse 9.
Sorry, not very good at the whole. Not too Bibled, as you might say. Happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks.
Ouch.
Amen.
Yeah. Why not? Hey, it's a party.
This came to us actually from Joe from Arizona.
Yeah.
He wrote, "This is an easy verse to use to slam the Bible, but as I do with most things, I need to know the whole story. And religious people have said that David wrote this because he'd rather do that, dash the babies against the rocks, than to come under someone else's rule. Is this true?" as an atheist, how do I use this verse to my advantage?
You know, I think if you read the entire thing, it's actually just these nine verses.
Yeah,
it's pretty clear that's not at all what it's saying. What it's saying, the Israelites, and then later the people from Judea were captured. This is talking about the captivity in Babylon.
Yeah,
and he's going on about it's really sad. We're mocked by our captors. We can't go anywhere. We're prisoners here. And at the end, the last little bit is all about revenge.
Okay.
Daughter Babylon, doomed to destruction, happy is the one who repays you according to what you have done to us. And then this verse here about happy is the one who seizes your infants. So in other words, you guys are going to get what's coming to you. So, we're in the under the boot right now.
Yeah.
It's not going to be long. God's going to come back and repay
you. We're going to take your kids. And
yeah, so I think the literal, I do appreciate the point. Let's make sure that we're understanding this correctly. The worst thing, of course, is to say something and then the Christian would respond with a sigh and say, if you actually read the context, it would say this. Read the whole thing, read the entire psalm. It is saying what it looks like it's saying.
Well, let's just take the apologetics approach and just say, okay, that's what they mean. I would rather kill other children than be kill children, infants, than be a slave.
Right.
What a moral position to have.
Right.
You are such a good person.
And this is the holiest thing that you,
yeah.
this is divinely inspired?
No, I totally get why you guys think this is the basis of all morality. Oh, I get it. Yeah.
Right.
Jeez.
And of course they'll look at the slavery in the Bible and by the way it's not just indentured servitude, it is good old fashioned slavery for life.
Right.
So don't let them tell you otherwise. And the genocide and the other things like this. And they'll say, well, it's just what they did during those times or whatever. But again, this is the Bible. This is coming from God. God can't figure out these things. And if you talk about objective moral truths, which don't change over time.
Right.
If we figured out that slavery is wrong, where's the problem here? I mean, are we confused here? The slavery is actually correct, or is God? So it just trying to hammer the Bible to take the shape of modern morality just doesn't make any sense. And that's teaching us something right there.
I was Facebook visiting with an old friend, I suppose you could say. I was watching old Christopher Hitchens debates this week, and I saw
Memory Lane.
Yeah, someone William Lane Craig that I never got around to watching because I really wanted to avoid William Lane Craig, and it just came up. I'm like, okay, I'll watch it. Wow, that guy. And this sort of reminds, trying to shoehorn modern morality into...
it's crazy.
And he tries everything. I watched a few other things, and he just seems to try to do that. And I'm like, this is... And he would refer to segments of the Bible like this and say, yeah, that's the basis of modern morality.
Yeah, and that's actually the argument that Richard Dawkins has used about him. I do not want to be in the same stage as somebody who justifies the Canaanite genocide. In fact, the punchline to that whole story, it is just bizarre. William Lane Craig says the Canaanite adults deserved it. They were very bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that because the Bible says so. So there we go, QED.
Yeah.
That's number one. The children went straight to heaven. So you're doing them a favor. So basically, killing kids is doing them a favor. You want to know who actually is, who my heart actually bleeds for? I'll tell you who. It was the Israelite soldiers. Just imagine busting into a house and chopping people to death. That must really have just been very painful for them. That is, from Wayne Lane Craig's standpoint, the real moral issue here,
and
the real moral challenge.
This is really bad logic. I mean, this is total sociopath logic here, but I'm good at that, so let me stretch that. So if killing the children was good for them because they went straight to heaven, I assume that William Lane Craig is good with his God, since that seems to be what his job is. So if somebody were to kill William Lane Craig, wouldn't that be doing him a favor? I see, that logic just falls apart for me.
You would think so,
yeah.
And then you have Andrea Yates, who drowned her kids because God or Satan or somebody told her to.
Right.
So William Lane Craig, how do you respond to that?
And this is the thing that I never quite understand about religion is, the pie in the sky when you die thing is when that happened, why be alive? And, there's a million apologetics answers to that. And I've not yet heard anything that says, no, it's cool. Whatever.
I imagine that having that reward of, if you're good, then you will go to heaven. So why wouldn't you just die? Why would you keep on living now? I think that at one point that was actually recognized. That may have been culturally recognized that was a danger. Hence the religious prohibition against suicide is so strong.
Why medical care? Oh, I mean, why? Oh, you know, oh, I'm sick. I might die. Cool.
Well, according to Mother Teresa, suffering is good.
No, you would the only care would be palliative care. You don't need to be in pain, but why extend life? I mean, it just seems like if there's going to be an afterlife and it's supposed to be way better than where you are now, all this medical stuff seems kind of like sideshow
stuff.
It's in
the way.
Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
Well, here's the thing, Sam. Like you say, most people are better than their books, better than their religions. I think that most people understand that it is better to, even if you say, oh, we keep them alive for being fruitful and multiplying. No, you even keep old people alive, give them palliative care and medical care to extend life because people recognize that that is the humane thing to do.
But you're not doing them any favors if you actually... Well, of course, this is one of those things where I find it very difficult to say that people are better than their books sometimes. And it's on this point that it kind of falls apart sometimes because, okay, you're going to prolong suffering.
Well, no, I mean palliative and medical treatment.
I know it's not prolonging suffering. It's prolonging life, and that's important to me. Like I said, you know, when the medical thing, you know, those medical bracelets you get that say, like, do not resuscitate, I'm going to get one that says try anything. Yeah, whatever. But
I'll pay you back when I wake up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know. You got some weird, wacky idea, and I'm about to die. Yeah, what do I got to lose?
There's a poll, a study, rather, and I do take polls and studies with a grain of salt, but it says that people who are religious expend three times the resources, the money, and so on, to stay alive during the last, you know, year or so of life, which is when all the money is spent.
Right.
When you think it would be the opposite, they'd say, "Oh, come on, the money can be spent much better to the poor, to my family, whatever. Do not spend that on me." And yet, it's the opposite, which seems to put a lie.
Some of it might be, I was kind of a jerk, so now I need to stay alive a bit longer to become not a jerk.
The study then would wonder, let's see all these altruists, these philanthropists, you know, in their wheelchair. By golly, I've turned over a new leaf here. I'm going to do what Jesus told me to do.
Yeah.
Finally.
So this is a real kind of, I generally don't get this raw religion, but this is one of those weeks, I guess. So we have that interesting discussion here. This email comes to us from Al from Handen, Connecticut, and he writes, "Hi, I recently had a discussion with my dad, who is a staunch Catholic, and he gave me this really long text to show his reasons for believing in the resurrection of Jesus and its spread. To sum up the piece, the author's reason is that Christianity wouldn't have spread if the apostles didn't proclaim Jesus' resurrection. How can you account for this?" I don't speak this variant of Christian. What does that mean?
I think he's referring to John Chrysostom, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
I had to look this up myself, but apparently that name means golden-tongued. So
okay.
This early church father was quite eloquent, apparently. I read his piece. I read the piece that this emailer pointed us to, and I'm just not getting it. I mean, I appreciate that if the apostles didn't do their work, we wouldn't know about this fabulous story. But you look at dozens, hundreds, thousands of religions throughout history. How do they start? I think Christianity looks pretty, like it started pretty much just like any other religion.
So this piece says that can you synopsize this for me again in a way?
I think it's a little bit different from what our emailer gleans from it. That it's not so much that the reason Christianity spread is because everybody talked about it. That's a given. We get it. That's how news travels.
It's not Jesus was resurrected because marketing, because that's what I'm hearing.
I think that the idea here is, and this is something that is asserted by a lot of believers, is that the marketing wouldn't have been so powerful and the marketing wouldn't have happened if the resurrection weren't true to begin with.
And yet you apply that to all the other beliefs. Okay, so we wouldn't have Hinduism, which, by the way, is far older than both Christianity and Judaism, if Shiva wasn't for real and Brahma and Vishnu and so on. I mean, the same logic applies.
We wouldn't have known that there was a Garden of Eden if they hadn't told us the story. And the fact that they told us the story means that there was literally a literal Adam, a literal Eve, a literal talking snake, and a literal Garden of Eden.
Let's put our heads together and think of a really good story. If just imagining it brings it to life. We can do better than this.
I let's see, a story where I get a spaceship. That would be great. If I could have a spaceship.
Time traveling spaceship?
Sure, time travel. That's fine. Yeah, give me a TARDIS. Don't care. But I do have a one-word refutation of that, which I think is pretty obvious.
Is it G-rated?
Yes. Well, this one is. Bigfoot.
Bigfoot? The fact that so many people know about Bigfoot.
Why would people be talking about Bigfoot?
Means that Bigfoot really exists.
Well, not only just the Bigfoot thing alone, but the other side of it is, remember a million years ago, well, not a million, where they somebody had the frozen Bigfoot thing, like that Bigfoot frozen in carbonite, and they had to thaw him out, and it was like this big media sensation, and it just turned out to be like a mannequin in a mask or something like that.
Sort of like the alien alien autopsy, one of these little bit publicity stunts.
Yeah.
There was the Cardiff giant that Barnum made a big deal about,
exactly.
And so on.
Yeah, you can manufacture this evidence. It's like, well, and in the case of this, it's really easy to make. Look, it's a cave with a stone that's been pushed. Yeah, ooh.
Nessie.
Nessie, that's another one. Yeah, but this is a variant of something that we hear a lot from Christians, more often than you'd think, is that I believe it because a lot of people believe it, and it seems popular, and how could something this popular be false?
There are 8 countries in the world in which the fraction of people who believe in Islam is 99% or greater.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a baby born in that country, what religion is it going to take? It's not going to become a 13, 15-year-old and say, I'm just going to kind of survey the religions and find the one that makes the most sense. He's going to be a product of his own culture.
Right, right.
And you know, if that explains why there's so many believers in Yemen or Pakistan, it kind of says why there's so many in America, so many Christians in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand, you know, it just seems more likely that if that's the religion in the area, that's what you're
right.
going to inherit,
right.
that religion comes in with as sort of a cultural inheritance.
Right.
But,
you know, our emailer, our listener is Al, and, you know, he really said, how do you account for this? How do we account as atheists for the people believing that the resurrection did occur and that the apostles proclaimed this resurrection? And sometimes as atheists, it's, you know, we like to say it's okay to say, I don't know, or I haven't researched that yet, or I'm not sure, but there's good evidence that it didn't happen like this.
I mean,
or there's no evidence that it did happen like this. And sometimes people are really dissatisfied with an I don't know answer. Sometimes a religious believer is really dissatisfied with that.
There's a little bit, when we start talking about trying, because this isn't about just the existence of something, whether or not something exists, whether or not something happened, but now they're bringing popularity into it. Now they're bringing mimetic crap into it. So, you know, and then I have to start saying things like, okay, we don't have evidence for, we don't have evidence against, whatever, but they would have every reason to fabricate evidence if they needed evidence. You know, there's a reason to lie here for a group of people who may need to lie in order to not die, kind of thing. So what, you know?
Well, the bottom line for me is if the Christian says you haven't proven my God wrong, well, yeah, I know. I grant you that up front. I mean, if that's the conversation, we don't even have to get there. The question is, do you, Mr. or Ms. Christian, have a warrant for your beliefs?
Right.
And that should be your argument. And if you don't have that, you're not going to convince me. And furthermore, you shouldn't have convinced yourself.
Absolutely.
So, Bob, what's sort of your take on the resurrection or the phenomenon of people believing in the resurrection?
Well, it's interesting. I just got into a bit of a personal study with Gary Habermas. He is a Liberty University professor, and the resurrection is his bag. The thing that he's well known for. And he has what he calls the minimal facts hypothesis or explanation for the resurrection, and to his credit, he's trying to have just 4 facts, a very very simple summary. We can get into them if you like, but it's trying to have not almost an elevator pitch to prove his case. So I kind of got into that in my on my blog, and then just to kind of wrap up the story, it seemed only fair just to say, well, if I'm going to slam this guy for the Christian explanation, okay, great. Well, how do I explain it? And the thing I think we need to be careful with what we're starting with is, what are we explaining? And in fact, I got some pushback on this. Someone got into the post thinking, I'm going to give a natural explanation for the resurrection.
Okay.
No, I'm going to give a natural explanation for the resurrection story. What the objective facts are, the Bible exists, we have documents outside the Bible, we have the Old Testament, we have these things. That's what we start with. So it's just a story. So it is not a fact that Paul saw Jesus. It's a fact that the story says that Paul saw Jesus, and so on and so
on. Right.
So I think when you get into this, I mean, you can look at the individual components. Why does the Old Testament say what it says? Why do the early church fathers say that? Why do the historians like Josephus say that? What are the New Testament? And really, it's the natural explanation. I mean, to sort of summarize, why do any religions say what they say? You know, once you explain that, you pretty much explained away Christianity. The early church fathers, they believed the same way that any people today believe. They didn't see this themselves. They were taught it. It's what they believe, just like any other believer.
Well, it's like how so much of the New Testament was written by people who weren't there.
Right, and the Gospels are, you know, 40 years plus old. Mm-hmm. Even the Epistles are decades old. Furthermore, even if you imagine that Paul wrote in the 50s his Epistles, how do we know what Paul wrote? We have our oldest copies have a huge gap between that date in the 200s, 300s, back to the 50s when Paul actually wrote.
Right.
What kind of hanky-panky was going on during that time? We just don't know.
And it may not have been intentional hanky-panky, is another thing.
That is true, but worse, there quite likely was intentional hanky-panky. In fact, there are 13 what are called Pauline epistles, that is, epistles, letters, right, that say, signed Paul. You know, best wishes, Paul.
But love and kisses.
But only 7 are thought by most scholars to actually have been written by Paul.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
So the remainder, some dude who might have been part of the Pauline school, might have been very, you know, thinking he was just conveying the ideas of his teacher, wrote some stuff and signed some other guy's name to it. That happened all the time.
Ah, boy. And that's, but it's the unerrant word of God, apparently. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how to get on a bestseller list.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I've been kind of sitting on this idea for a long time, and I kind of want to talk to you guys about it. Because I've been sitting on it for 2 years and I'm no closer to it, and so I thought I'd pitch it to you guys and see what you think. It's kind of a fundraising idea, but Ask an Atheist needs business cards these days, and I had some really cheap ones printed up back in the day. Back in October for the CFI conference here, they just said, you know, they were in Futura font, which I'm kind of partial to, and does Ask an Atheist on a, you know, 1180 AM KLY.
Super bare bones.
Yeah, super bare bones stuff. But I want a business card that that has some impact. And as you guys know, I like propaganda. I like weird things.
Yes, I know very well.
Yeah, I'm about to. Yeah, you live with me. I'm about to actually go be on Radio versus the Martians to talk about exactly that sort of thing. And you know, I think everybody knows how much I like Chick Tracks. You're familiar with them, right?
I am. They're great.
Yeah, I absolutely
good
love
for a
them.
Laugh.
I have a collection of them, and I often peruse the website. So I was going through the website, and it's like, you know what? There's a lot of new tracks that I don't have. Let me see how to order them. And so I was going to order some tracks, because whatever. And then I noticed that they do custom printing.
Custom printing? Like, we can make our own tract?
No. If you order, a large number of tracks, like a really large number of tracks, they will print anything in their repertoire, and they will do a custom printing on the back of your church or religious or business or...
Come visit our church and or atheist
but
website.
They specifically say businesses, so it's like, how would that be for a business card? Yeah, here's my business card. It's a Chick Track. No, look at the back. It's cool.
I love it.
You go to a hotel and slip it in the Gideon's Bible?
Yeah,
leave a few around?
Now, I don't know if they'd print it, but I'd be giving them money. And the whole idea behind those tracts is that they get stuck in places where people are unlikely to find them. They read them, and then the whole last page happens, and you check the yes, I approve of Jesus. Has anybody ever actually checked anything in those boxes they include in those? I don't know.
They have the sinner's prayer.
Yeah, who do you mail that to? It's like, God, P.O. Box 1, Pueblo, Colorado. Mm. But I think it'd be because it would serve their ends too, because they would get their message out.
And of course, if they refuse, that'd be a new story in itself.
That would be an interesting story. So,
but how do you feel about patronizing them?
I love it.
Okay.
I don't. You know, if they would print that for me, they deserve the money.
If they would print the please join us or brought to you by the name of your business, Ask an Atheist.
Yeah. No.
AskAnAtheist.tv.
You can say anything. So the back would just be like sort of a business cardy looking affair. With, you know, our website and stuff like that. And I'm going between Dark Dungeons, the one about D&D, where Blackleaf dies and it's horrible, and Elfstar gets the real power and meets Satan.
Well, D&D does send you to Satan.
And then
so
she's saved by...
That's known.
Yeah, she's saved by a teenager with a chiseled part in his... But the one I really want is The Last Generation. The one with the superhero...
That's a Star Trek series I've never seen before.
Yeah, so that's my idea. If you're interested in helping me bring that to reality, do contact me at the website askanatheist.tv. It's non-trivial, and that's why I've been sitting on it for two years.
Wisdom of crowds.
Indeed. So we have some interesting news. Hey, there's a book on the bestseller list, and guess how it got there? A church spends $200,000 for its pastor's book to reach the New York Times bestseller list. Seattle-based Mars Hill Church is facing a backlash concerning how a book had written by the head of the church, Mark Driscoll, was co-authored with his wife and became a New York Times bestseller. In 2011 and 2012, Mars Hill paid a marketing company $210,000 in a contract designed to boost the book to the bestseller list. The church stated that the strategy was neither uncommon nor illegal, but admitted that it was unwise and vowed not to replicate the practice. It also stated that profits went directly to the church, not to Pastor Driscoll. Sales from the book have topped $200,000 just thus far.
So they spent $210,000. They've got back slightly more than $200,000, and so it looks like the church is actually not coming out ahead here, but Pastor Driscoll gets to say, I have a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, they're not...
He's looking pretty sweet.
Yeah, they're not looking for economic benefit here. They're looking for social benefit. I mean, Mars Hill is a church that's trying to sell itself as sort of like a new hip cult.
Now, why is it that an atheist can see the ethical issue here, and yet,
yeah,
and yet, this church, which is going to, you know, teach people how to do the right thing, is a little confused on the
matter.
That's
the thing is, you go to the church, hey, it was a crummy thing to do, and then the church goes, well, it wasn't illegal. I thought that's what we were supposed to be doing. I thought that's what we did.
You guys are supposed to be you know, going to on the straight and narrow path, you know, through the narrow gate, yeah, which is difficult to go through, and so on. You know, taking the high road. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, is that, you know, people work really hard to get their books out there. And yes, it's a lot of work for an author to provide 6,000 names and addresses for individual orders in across 300 and, you know, across 1,000 different addresses with no more than 350 in each state. I mean, that's hard work that Mark Driscoll
really
had to do.
A little easier if you're a mega church pastor, but anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's
hard work to confuse
with
the reporting
in
systems.
Five states.
Yeah, with Mars Hill, I mean, from what I understand, the satellite churches, the head pastor at those churches has come in, mash play on a DVD, and then call it a day.
Yeah, there's 15 churches in 5 states.
Yeah.
Mark Driscoll does a DVD appearance.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fun times. So all of that data you're throwing at me seems a little on the specific side.
Yeah. This is actually the game that the consulting firm actually plays in order, yeah, to outsmart the systems for the tracking of what actually constitutes a bestseller.
No, that is hard. I don't think I could do it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that was kind of lost on me, but Becky, this is a point that you raised, which was the $210,000 isn't just ordinary money. It came tax-free to the church.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And these churches can, you know, mega churches can sometimes collect in excess of $500,000 per week, depending on how many services they do.
So paying, instead of paying into the system that, you know, instead of doing the thing that everybody else has to, instead of paying taxes, which is, you know, all, you know, all organizations are supposed to do, and unless you're religious, instead of doing that, instead of being moral, they did something, well, it's not illegal type thing. I love that argument. This just the whole thing, you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, and then your response is to go, it's not illegal or anything.
Nobody ever told me that I wasn't allowed to eat cookies.
Okay. I'm beginning to see why they need a source for external morality, because they don't have any.
They can't figure it out for themselves. But just to sort of zoom back a little bit and take a larger view, the bigger the landscape this is coming from is when he got his hand slapped back in November for something else.
Oh, what?
What did he get slapped for?
Remember that plagiarism thing?
Ooh, wait,
oh,
no.
Yes, he had
fabricated
or altered some of his citations for a particular paper he wrote.
It's kind of a crazy story. I'll just make it real brief. But he was on a show. This researcher who was the interviewer,
yeah,
blindsided him by saying, Pastor Mark, I understand I'm a little confused here, because I see here's this a quote from your book. Here's another book written by this other guy that says same quote. Pastor Mark, can you explain this? And she was pretty hard-hitting, which I think is kind of what a journalist is supposed to do.
Yeah.
I'm not one, but I think it's what they're supposed to do. Anyway, so she posted her information. She showed plagiarism in another book. She then quit or got fired or something just a few days later. You know, huge, huge fallout. And, you know, there again, you think, I mean, you know, plagiarism, giving credit. I mean, you know, why is it the secular people are trying to you know, are wagging their fingers
to
at the
point
church?
There, yeah.
It's supposed to be the other way around,
so,
I thought.
So, Bob, you are both an author, and sort of what's your take on this scheming for marketing his book and getting on the seller list?
Yeah, I mean, this hits me close to home. I mean, because, you know, I've written 4 books, and I'd love a little, to sort of tweak the system and kind of have it work in my favor.
Yeah.
It don't work that way. I mean, I try to play the game fairly. I wouldn't want to get an unfair advantage. I wouldn't want to have some sort of accolade, knowing that I didn't really deserve it.
It's not even original either. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Scientology was long known for. I mean, I don't know if it's an apocryphal story or if it actually happened, but I've been hearing about the story about Scientology for years, where
the Dianetics thing had a
not just Dianetics, but like when L. Ron Hubbard, when the Battlefield Earth stuff came out, and he started writing science fiction again, figuring it might bring Scientologists in. People would come in, buy a whole bunch of books,
Oh, really?
And then bring them to the church. The church would forward them to the publisher, which is part of the church. And then the church would resell them to the point where...
Ka-ching!
Where bookstores would order more of these books because they were out. And they would receive a shipment with their pricing label already on it.
Oh, dear.
How convenient.
Because the book wasn't touched. Nobody actually read it.
Wow.
And that's part of the reason why... These bestseller lists have all this technology to figure out if people are pumping up sales and stuff like that. And yeah, what a wonderful display of morality.
Well, Mark Driscoll has apologized. He has said that he's going to sort of back off, try to avoid being a celebrity.
But this strikes me as an obvious one. I mean, doesn't
right.
it? Yeah,
right. I mean, it's and the preface to the summary that I saw in terms where he sort of publicly apologizes is Mark has grown so much this year, and I mean he's been doing this for a long time.
This was 2011, 2012.
Yeah, he's not a teenager.
He only just grown now that it's reached the light of day?
Well, he's only 17 years old. No, I'm sorry, that's someone else I'm thinking of. Yeah, he already has his executive function very fully in place, I think.
Yeah, I. This seems like an easy one. It's lying at this point. It's industrial strength lying. It's, there's an industry and an assembly line to manufacture a lie.
If there's one little silver lining, he was only for one day back in January the number one bestseller. He came back like a few weeks later, maybe as number 12, and then no one else has, he's not popped up on any
lists. What was the book even about?
It was called something like Real Marriage, and it was co-authored with his wife.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about...
Do you have a fake marriage then?
About, yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
About his wife, actually, is that one of the friends of Ask an Atheist, Darren, who has worked with us in the past, actually went to a lecture by Mark Driscoll on relationship issues, the Christian way to do sex and relationships and all that kind of thing to attract the young crowd, because that's interesting. And an audience member asked Ms. Driscoll a particular question, and Pastor Mark answered for her.
Wow.
Yikes. So I'm not thinking this book has much information for someone who doesn't want her husband to speak for her. Then again, isn't that what Mark Driscoll's Mars Hill Church is all about?
That is my understanding. I've been to several Mars Hill services. I actually am part of a Mars Hill small group at which I've been welcomed. Let me just make that clear. But it very much is old school. Women come in and they make a big deal about, young people, we love them. You got tats, you got piercings, not a problem. Come in and, come as you are. However, women do have this role in society and men do have that role. And, is it Timothy or I forget which book it is. It talks about women's place. That's very much emphasized.
Great. So you can have tattoos and piercings, but
you got to know your place.
You got to have them,
sister,
in the kitchen, as the joke. Fantastic. Wow. Yeah. So I guess there's the news story that we probably really should cover. It is all over the media, and I'll be very surprised if you hear it from us first. Fred Phelps, he of the Westboro Baptist Church and the God Hates Just About Everything websites, is apparently dying. Nate Phelps, son of Westboro Baptist Church founder Fred Phelps, reported on Facebook yesterday that his father is at the edge of death in hospice care in Topeka, Kansas. Nate, along with other family members no longer associated with the church, are being blocked from seeing the elder Phelps, even though it is rumored that the 84-year-old Fred has been excommunicated from his own church. It's reported that the church is probably being run by Fred Phelps' daughter, Shirley Phelps Roper.
Very interesting.
Okay, so he's dying. But he's old, and full of hate. And that's kind of how it works out.
God needs more of those up in heaven, I think.
Yeah. What really caught my eye on this one is excommunicated from his own church.
He's been excommunicated from his own church and being blocked from seeing people outside the church.
Well, okay, yes, but I want to focus on this excommunication thing for a minute here. I thought the church was basically, like, everything everybody's told me about Westboro Baptist Church is that the church is essentially his family. I mean, it's the Phelps Church. Everybody there he was related to. He got excommunicated from it? He didn't just get, like, defrocked or removed from power or told forcefully retired or fired. He was excommunicated. What do you do?
Not dad emeritus.
God, imagine you have a family spat. Imagine you're sitting around the table and somebody overcooks the squash or drops the salad or somebody forgets to buy mayo or whatever, and the response is, that's it, you're gonna burn for eternity. I'm excommunicating you from this religion.
I'm amazed that the structure of the church was even set up such that this was even possible. I would have thought he would have been dictator for life. But
maybe you get excommunicated when you're too old. Are there older? Are there any older members? Are there any members that are older than 84 years old?
I do not believe so.
Is it like a Logan's Run for...
renew!
Mr. Phelps's palm flower
has... Do not
has
eat the vegetables.
Jeez.
I don't... You know, it does kind of remind me a little bit of the Scientology structure, where you have someone who was formerly in power, who is now considered no longer in power, no longer cool with the religion, but is also being sort of hidden away from the rest of the public.
It's not quite like Scientology, because the Hemet days in California, like when he was dying, he was still theoretically in charge of the church. He just was hiding. Basically, the last third of his life is about him running away from people who wanted money from him.
Okay.
And that was just more of that. And wanted money from him for like things like taxes and back child support. And
so that's Scientology. I don't know that Fred Phelps has any. The Phelps family, they were a long history of very successful lawyers.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that they haven't crossed their T's and dotted their I's in terms of all those.
Oh,
those
I'm sure
things.
He's locked up. Yeah. I imagine they got all that cleaned up. But here comes the question now. Is somebody going to pick at his funeral?
Not I.
I would hope not. I mean that just to point that out. Imagine if someone picked up the funeral of this hate monger. That's enough.
Wait a minute. He's been excommunicated from their church. His own damn family's gonna pick at his own damn funeral.
There we go. Nice turnaround.
Wow. I hadn't even considered. Man, that would just be the.
But then are the student groups and the friendly bikers, are they gonna call? Are they gonna do a barrier to let, you know, to like shield out the picketers?
Yeah,
I think they'll pass on that one.
I think he's gone senile and starting to talk sense.
I mean, he's been excommunicated from the church. He's separated from his family. You know, who knows what's going on there? I want to pretend like I don't. I mean, I have this thing in the back of my head that says maybe it's not moral to be laughing about this, but then I remember who it is, and I kind of like, okay, yeah,
I think
who cares?
So.
But at the same time, I mean, you have people that, you know, Nate Phelps, he's very conflicted, but this is his father, and he's not being permitted to see him.
It is his father, and I'm not going to pick at the funeral, clearly, but I wouldn't mind installing a urinal above his gravesite. This is Ask an Atheist! You can give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. My name is Sam. With me was Bob and Becky. Post-show is at the Harmon Tap Room in about an hour. I'll be a little late, but you know how it is. Catch you guys next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.
Bill Morrison,
KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma.